I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Religion and its place in American life and culture and politics has long fascinated me, as it has my guest now, that he was compelled to travel the United States and discuss those at the forefront of the culture wars. Veteran and award-winning broadcaster Ralph Ben-Murgy joins me now, and his six-part documentary series God Bless America airs Mondays, beginning January 19th on Vision TV. It's a great program and timely, what with the inauguration of Barack Obama. After a noted 20-year career with the CBC, Ralph Ben-Murgy currently hosts Ben-Murgy in the Morning on Toronto's Jazz FM 991. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Ralph Ben-Murgy. Good morning, Mr. Ben-Murgy.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Good.
What was involved in this journey across America or through America? How long did it take?
You know, we did it really fast. We did it in a 12-day nonstop fly, drive. It was literally trains, planes, and automobiles. And at one point, we were in a 24-hour period doing interviews in Philadelphia, New York, and Los Angeles. So it was a bit of a whirlwind, but it was certainly enjoyable.
And obviously informative for you, and you were fascinated enough about religion and America to want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things for me, I did a series previously for Vision called My Israel. And one of the things for me is I really find that most of what we see as conversation about issues like religion in the United States are very simplistic points of view. That when I told people I was doing this, they assumed I was going to talk to right-wing evangelicals, and that was the whole story. And boy, aren't those people really crazy, and aren't they really out there? And, you know, the truth is there's so much more nuance and sophistication to conversations about any particular thing. And in this case, in the United States, in religion and politics, it's not just about, for one thing, evangelicals, and for another, right-wing evangelicals. I mean, I met people like Tony Campolo, who's a progressive Christian evangelical, who was an absolutely fascinating character, and Jay Baker, who's a punk evangelist, whose parents were Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. I met Muslim hip-hoppers, Christian Zionists, all kinds of people all over the state. So for me, it's about letting people see that things are not always simple and obvious and black and white, and that even in that particular conversation about the U.S. and religion, there's a lot of nuance to it.
Watching the series, and I've seen, I guess, the first five episodes of it, one wonders, is America still relevant? I mean, there are those in this country that think that it doesn't matter anymore, that, and the enemies of America probably think the same thing, too, that they're on their way out anyway.
Well, I mean, I think that'd be a vast underestimating of the American situation. America is the most powerful country in the world on many different levels, economically and certainly politically. It has its army alone is larger than all other armies in the world put together. So, you know, it has an empire, economic and political, that extends across the globe. So, really, America is maybe going through tough times, and it's, you know, there's an ebb and flow to empire. So, at this moment, they may seem like they're on a bit of the ebb, I should say, than the flow, but nonetheless, there's still a lot going on down there. And, you know, the election of Barack Obama around the world has been seen as revolutionary. I mean, no one could have imagined there'd be a black president of the United States with an Arab name. So America is a fascinating place. I mean, one of the things I think I went down there, and I don't know, I think a lot of Canadians like me have always had this ability to see America and kind of almost look down our noses at it and say, what? A crazy place. What are they doing down there? But, you know, the things that make it not work are also the things that make it work. You know, it is truly a dynamic society, and there's a lot of different forces going on down there. So I don't think it's irrelevant at all. I think, particularly in the case of religion and politics in the United States, I just think it's important to see that there's a fundamentalism in the United States, just like there's a fundamentalism in the Muslim world and in the Jewish world and in the Hindu world. And there's reasons for it. You know, Chris Hedges is in our show, and he has a fantastic mind, but he understands that there's a certain fundamentalism there that has to be recognized for the fact that it's about isolation, it's about economic despair, it's about needing to believe. And I think that when you get to 40 to 50 million evangelicals in the country, you have to start thinking what effect do they have on the rest of the world and in America.
So with Obama's election, do they still have a place?
In what way?
When we think of the Bush administration, it seemed that they were very powerful in the media and in within the administration itself. Do you think the religious right has a place in an Obama presidency?
Well, the inaugural prayer is going to be given by Rick Warren.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Certainly, when one in four registered voters is an evangelical in the United States, they do have a place. This wasn't their election to win. Bush had done much to discredit himself, not only with non-religious or non-fundamentalist Americans. Evangelicals weren't happy with him. They didn't think he'd delivered on his promises. And right now, gay marriage is a raging issue in the United States. So, you know, there's so many different fronts for this. And, you know, people thought with the ascendancy of George Bush for 8 years that really you couldn't elect somebody who wasn't evangelical, but indeed you could, even though Barack Obama has had to put out his credentials that he is a religious man, that he believes that his Lord and Savior is Jesus Christ, and he's using an evangelical who's also said that gays, homosexuality and incest are in the same sentence. So clearly he still is deciding he needs to reach out to those evangelicals and make them part of what he does.
And so conversely, will progressives have a place?
Yes, and I think it's a new place for a lot of them, because I think one of the crises for the American, I would argue for most of the Western industrialized nations, for people of belief, and I'm a religious person, I'm not a fundamentalist, I'm a religious person, and I like to define that for people, because it is possible to be religious and not fanatical. So people like me, but also all kinds of other people, all need something to believe in. And I guess in America these days, they're finding something in the left. Because guys like Campolo, like Tony Campolo, who heads a movement called the Red Letter Christians, have decided that the parts of the Bible they want to concentrate on are the parts that have to do with social justice. Martin Luther King was a preacher. He was of the left. You know, Tommy Douglas was a preacher. He, you know, created the NDP and the CCF before it. So social justice as part of the teachings of Christ, and social justice as a part of Jewish teachings and all other religions, compassionate belief, is what progressive politics is about.
So why is it then that, I mean, you discussed this in one of the programs, the progressives haven't been mobilized. And why have they, I guess, let the Christian right hijack the sort of religion?
Well, I think it's not just a religious issue on that question. There's a guy named George Lakoff, L-A-K-O-F-F, who's written very well about the failure of the progressive movement in the United States to capture the presidency before Obama. And Obama has obviously read some of his books, including Don't Think of an Elephant and Moral Politics. Because what he says is that the right was extremely well organized, and the neoconservative movement had millions and millions of dollars poured into think tanks, and media was always available. There are literally studios in right-wing think tanks that are open 24 hours a day for anybody who wants to do an interview. They're more than accommodating, and their message has been beautifully crafted. You know, you don't talk about abortion, you talk about partial birth abortion. So by the way, you're framing it as the murder of a late-stage pregnancy. Progressives have had an inability to create their own language and their own ability to set forth an agenda before now. But if you look at the Democratic National Convention in the United States in Denver last summer, what they had was a prayer at the beginning of every one of their days. They had a faith program policy platform that Campolo and others were part of, and they realized that you've got to find a way to reach out to people who believe, and you've also got to find a way to reframe a message so that you own it and not the other guy owns it. So the continual losses from the Reagan administration on down, except for the brief interregnum of Clinton, they have been because the right has gotten its act together, and they've marshaled, look, when you've got evangelicals or Orthodox, in Israel, when the Orthodox vote, they are told by their rabbis, vote for this guy, period, end of sentence. And they go, and as they say in the United States, evangelicals vote in buses. They don't show up alone on foot or in a car. They get church groups going down and voting in blocks. So the leftists have to find a way to mobilize individualists, because people, especially people who aren't believers, as it were, you know, part of it is they don't want to belong to a club. Any club that has me as a member, I don't want to belong. So that individualism backfires when it's time to mobilize. What Obama was able to do was inspire people in an almost a pseudo-religious fashion. I mean, if you remember the beginning of this campaign, the Yes We Can, it sent chills up everybody's spine. It was like, oh my God, this guy's charismatic. And it was a quasi-religious movement, you know? And what the Republicans tried to do is they tried to reframe that as he's just an empty-headed celebrity. So they showed him with Paris Hilton and Britney Spears. But in reality, his people on the ground were organizing and organizing and organizing so that they could have people voting in buses, not just on foot.
In the first program that we'll see on the 19th, you have dinner at George and Linda Roller's house.
Yeah.
That was fascinating to watch. Who are they?
George Roller is the head of the Center for Christian Statesmanship. And this was started by another fellow who passed away, M. James Kennedy, I believe. But what Roller is a Christian lobbyist. He has lunches, he puts out flyers in Washington for all the staffers, the young people who are coming from all over the country to say, come and join our prayer lunch, and, you know, we'll pray together and we'll talk scripture. So he's bolstering those young people, but then he also gives out awards to politicians very publicly to say these are people who have so-called Christian values. What he's really saying is they have evangelical Christian values. And he's part of a very powerful part of the United States Congress. We have a congressman, a black congressman from Minnesota in our, a Muslim, and the only one in the Congress in our show. And then we ask him point blank, do you think that the evangelicals have a lot of power in Congress? He says, absolutely they do. So Roe is the kind of guy who keeps that fire going. And he's, you know, he's a charming, nice man. And I give everybody their due. I'm not out to make a point that I know the answer. They're wrong and I'm right. I'm trying to understand what moves these people. And him and his wife are, they're completely consumed with their belief that the only way to salvation is through Jesus Christ and that the world was created 6,000 years ago. And yet this is a man who was a teacher of the year in Florida. You know, this is a guy who's got a quick mind and all the rest of it, but they make these connections. You know, they believe in creationism. They believe the founding fathers were on their side. And in our last episode, we show how everybody in America thinks the founding fathers was proving their point.
Well, what did they serve at dinner?
A lot. They served a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah.
They had casseroles. They had turkey. They had a million. I mean, believe me, they opened up their house. When we first got in touch with them, they didn't even want to talk.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, maybe we have time, maybe we don't. And our producer, Courtney Pasternak, said, look, this guy's not out to try to make you look a fool. He's out to talk to you. And by the end of it, they said, okay, tell you what, not only can you come to my office, come to our home and we'll have dinner together. And we ended up having 2 hours with them at home. And it was, I found it absolutely fascinating. We used them several times in the series.
Do you think I'll move on to something else because I was just thinking about something you said in the last bit. You give everyone their due in the series. Someone that you interview, Larry Everest, he talks about getting religion out of politics, and you said to him that that's a very patronizing idea.
I said to him that religion as a belief system, which he says is not, he's a Marxist who believes that religion is the opiate of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that if you believe, you should stop it already. And as a religious person, I took him on and said, I have as much right to believe as you have to not believe. And you're patronizing me. I mean, I think I tell him flat out, you know, that's patronizing when I tell them that I believe. And
yeah.
Like, get over it. I want people to get over it. And that's patronizing. What do you mean, get over it? I'm not going to get over it. He says, you can't prove that God exists. And I said, well, you can't prove that love exists, but we tend to believe that it does, you know, and that there's a need for belief in a lot of people's lives. But there's also a feeling that this is not just a simple reality of physical facts and then you drop dead and it's over. For others like me, there's a belief that there's an irrational and a mystical and a poetic and a beautiful and a transcendent part of life that can be encapsulated in ritual, tradition, and belief and admiration and awe for something greater than us. So when he says that, I mean, I loved him. We found him in Denver out of nowhere. Just because we were around and there were so many people in Denver for the convention. And I just found him fascinating. And you know what? I have as good a time talking to him as I do to George Wohler, and yet I don't agree with either of them. But it's not about what I believe. It's about what they believe. I just challenge them once in a while.
So where does, considering both sides, or the multiple sides that there are in the United States, where do you think America goes from here? Do you think that there's a happy medium that Or does one side eventually triumph over the other?
Well, I'm reading a fascinating book right now by Eric Margolis, The American Raj.
Oh, right. He was on for the on this program.
Yeah. He has a complex, a nuanced understanding of who America is that Americans don't have.
Yeah.
I think America doesn't understand its or accept its responsibility as an empirical force. And because of that, I find Americans remarkably unaware of not only their effect in the world, but the world in general. They just don't seem to understand that it's out there in the same way that other countries do. So I worry about that. I worry about that kind of unconsciousness and that amount of power at the same time. In these days, empires always rise and always fall. I don't know if it's going to be a quicker rise and fall for America than it would be for others because it's accelerated everything. But I think that unless there's an enlightened leadership in America that can connect meaning and purpose with things that are not truly simply about power and economics, then America is going to have a real problem. In other words, until there's a moral leadership that is not about arrogance and an economic leadership that's about the environment, that America, like all the rest of us, is going to be in trouble. And as Canadians, you know, you really got to, it's the elephant beside us. You've got to understand that what they do, it deeply affects us. So, I think it's important we engage in some way, shape, or form with them about getting a more global perspective on the situation.
And how do you think Canadians react? I mean, we all know how Canadians react to America. Do you think that'll improve at all?
Well, I don't want it to improve. I mean, I don't want to say, you know what, maybe we've got these folks all wrong. One of the great things about being a Canadian is that we have the ability to see America for its faults as well as its strengths. I think they could take a few lessons from our system. We could take a few lessons from theirs, frankly. You know, they have a more riotous democracy, but there's a lot more going on down there that is very exciting and very interesting. And I think what the Canadians have to start doing is realizing that, you know, George Bush is not America. He won half the vote every time, almost literally half the vote every time. So the other half of Americans didn't want George Bush. And I think there's, you know, tens of millions of Americans who want a more progressive view of the country. So I think Canadians have to find a way to connect with that. And there are, you know what, we have conservative governments here now, and we have to start realizing that there's a very strong effect of provinces like Alberta that are much more like republics than they are like part of the regular Canadian stream, have become much more normal. You know, it was unheard of before, and now you've got Stephen Harper, who's an evangelical, but doesn't talk about it. I mean, I still think we're not the kind of people who say, God bless America, right?
Yeah.
We don't say God bless Canada. This whole election went by, not one person said it out loud.
Well, Lester Pearson used to, I guess.
Yeah. The sky is blue.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day. Everything is beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
Ralph, it's been wonderful to have you on. Congratulations on this program. It is a terrific and fascinating one.
Oh, thank you.
And we'll watch it on starting Monday.
Great. Thanks a lot.
The program is called God Bless America. It begins Monday, the 19th of January, airing for 6 weeks subsequent on Vision TV. Ralph Ben-Murgi on the line. I'm Joseph Plata.